Welcome to Building Bridges, your community and labor report in exile. Brought to you Wednesdays at 8 p.m. over WBAI Radio in Exile, internet radio at www.wbix.org. I'm Ken Nash with Mimi Rosenberg. Recently, the labor and community movements in New York City came together to protest in front of the offices of the New York City Housing Authority, NYCHA. They then marched across the Brooklyn Bridge en route to a public hearing. 2,000 whistleblowing trade unionists, tenants, and supporters came together to protest as NYCHA readied itself to implement a mandated forced work requirement for public housing tenants. They also protested NYCHA's refusal to enforce Section 3, a long-standing federal requirement that public housing authorities require their contractors to employ housing residents as well as other low-income people for good-paying construction jobs. The community and labor coalition sponsoring the protest was addressed by leaders of labor and housing advocacy organizations throughout the city. The issues it addressed also attracted a bevy of politicians, including all four of the Democratic candidates for mayor in the upcoming primary. So let's now hear what this community and labor coalition had to say in Brooklyn outside, then inside the public hearing.
Okay? It's about leveling the playing field in the New York City Housing Authority. Alright? It's about time that they follow the rules that everybody else has to. Not the ones that they want to make up and police themselves. Alright? We all know that's bullshit. Alright? The people that live in these projects deserve the chance to become apprentices that belong to our union. Look around. They're standing next to you. And we're standing up to you, and we're fighting for that. Together, we are your life. We are your life. We are your life. We are your life. We are your life.
Next up, I got the citywide coordinator for this Trains Alliance. The brother that preached all these bridges and brought everybody together, Brother Jahara High.
You see, Section 3 ain't not work for free. 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 Brothers and sisters, and we are so happy that all of you have joined us today for this rally for economic justice in the turn of the city of Rapp. Thank you for being here. Give yourselves a hand.
He's our president of the Central Labor Council here in New York City, Brother Brian McLaughlin.
Brian!
Thank you, thank you. Hello, my brothers and sisters. Join Ed Malloy, the leaders of the building trades, the rank and file, the community groups that are here today, and to share with you good jobs for those that are in public housing and career opportunities in the building trade. Brothers and sisters, for many years, going back to my early days in Local Union Number 3, the New York City Housing Authority has been a breeding ground for unscrupulous employers and substandard conditions. And it was unacceptable then, and it's more unacceptable today. When we have the coalition building that's taking place, the understanding and the goodwill that exists to create career opportunities for men and women who currently live in public housing. The New York City Housing Authority has been violated, number one, in regard to Davis Bacon and the prevailing wage laws. The refusal to recognize and to live up to the conditions in Section 3 is deplorable and unacceptable. And last but not least, the mandated service is something that we must unite now and not back up on one inch. And that we say to President Bush and to the administration, it's not about speaking Spanish before Spanish-speaking groups or going to black churches on Sunday for photo ops. It's standing with the minority community and immigrants and public housing. Coalition that will stand with you until we win this fight, and we'll look forward to a new mayor in New York City that will force this agency to live up to prevailing wage laws and some of the standards they refuse to recognize. Thank you one and all.
Thank you. Hello everybody, public housing residents, I want to hear you scream.
NYCHA, no, no, no! NYCHA, no, no, no! NYCHA, no, no, no! NYCHA, no, no, no! Let me tell you, my friends, I'm from the New York City Public Housing Residents Alliance, and NYCHA has become a monster. It is a dysfunctional monster that's out of control. It sits up and makes itself king, judge, and executioner. It goes against the people's constitutional rights. NYCHA and HUD conspired with Congress and President Clinton and Senator Lazio to put forth a bill in 1998 called the Quality Housing and Work Responsibility Act. The act of that law, the act of that evil law, was to spread iniquity over all the United States of America. Because what they did was to slip underneath the Constitution the destruction of our 14th Amendment rights, our equal rights under the law. It seeks to make us in New York, October 1st, slaves just because we live in public housing. And I'll say, NYCHA, no, no, no! This law seeks to tell people that if anyone in their family between the ages of 19 and 62, if they don't do the community service, not only that person, but their whole family will be evicted forever from public housing in these United States. No, no, no! And yet, 35 years ago, on the national statutes in the law, passed by President Johnson was a thing called Section 3. And NYCHA has yet to implement Section 3. San Francisco's doing it. Atlanta's doing it. What in the hell is NYCHA's problem that it can't enact that law so that people who work and people who live in public housing can't work for a decent wage? Because they're rats, rats, rats. And I say, NYCHA, no, no. I'm glad that union is here with residents and community leaders, because together we are the people of the United States, and we will not let this go by. We will not let this go by. NYCHA, no, no, no.
Thank you, brother. Thank you very much. Next up, we got our comptroller, Alan Evesey, running for mayor.
Yeah. Hi, everybody. Yeah. Thank you all for being here, because this is very important. This is how we define the city of New York. So these issues are crucial. One, we got to stand together against the New York City Housing Authority going to free market rents. That would be devastating to thousands of people, particularly the low-income and moderate-income people in NYCHA housing. But we agreed on that, no market rent. Number two, Section 3 is good law. Section 3 says that we train the residents of the New York City Housing Authority for good jobs in the construction trades. There are jobs going begging in the construction trades, and the construction trades with union work and union help pay prevailing wage. That's decent wages for people. That's what New York is all about. Now I am, as your controller, by the way, my name's Alan Hennessy, for those who don't know. As your controller, one of my jobs is to enforce the prevailing wage. And we have enforced it very effectively. We have made sure that companies that cheated with prevailing wage were debarred. 53 companies were debarred from doing business with the city. We have recouped $22 million for workers who got cheated because they weren't paid for prevailing wage. And what Section 3 wants us to do is to train for these jobs the people in New York City Housing Authority to work with the unions, a perfect partnership, and the unions are here to do that. It is a perfect way to go, and it is dumb public policy not to proceed. And at the same time, the contradiction is where you can have good jobs at prevailing wage, and you say no to that, and yes to community service, to mandate tenants get go out and have to work 8 hours a week or get evicted. I think that's just dumb public policy as well. So let's use the force of this democracy under the leadership of these unions and the labor movement to say we want good jobs for the residents of the New York City Housing Authority. We want them teamed up with the labor movement, providing work for our own workforce. We want prevailing wage. We want decent living conditions in this city. That's what New York City is all about. Thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen. God bless.
Thank you, Alan.
All right, now I want to introduce a woman who has been fighting for public housing and for housing for over 20 years in the city of New York. They call her the queen of the project, okay? Council member, Councilwoman Margarita Lopez. Indeed, I am the queen of the project. I'm proud of it. What NYCHA want to do to the people of the projects? They want to force them to work for free. Not only NYCHA want to force them to work for free, they are denying to the people of the project the right to develop skills when they refuse to implement Section 3. Section 3 will give skills, job opportunities, priority to the residents of the public housing. NYSHA do not want the alliance between unions and the people who live in the projects, because the people who live in the projects and the members of the union are the real people of this city. I'm going inside of that building and leaving you in turn of my body, but my spirit is going to stay here. I'm going in there to tell Chairman Tino Hernandez, have you lost your mind? I'm going in there to tell him one more time, since 1994, they're trying to change the laws in the projects, and they're trying to displace poor people from New York City. That's what we're talking about here. They don't want this city to be one city where everybody have a job and everybody have a home. Let's keep fighting. NYSHA, no!
Thank you, thank you. Next, we have a guy that's been a good friend of labor. His name is Scott Stringer. He's a great advocate. Let's give it up for Scott.
What's happening? It's great to be here. I want to make two quick points. Point number one. Let me tell you, the fact that the NYSHA people and the federal government tell us that people have to be mandated to do community service, what planet are they on? Every public housing resident I know is part of the tenant association, the park association, fights for schools, fights for children. How dare you tell people how to act and what to do? And point two, there's a new New York in just a few weeks. And the first thing we're going to do is we're going to make sure that we implement Section 3, put real people to work in a safe way, making sure in the new New York, in the post-3 era, times are changing. We have 3 weeks to get out there, 3 weeks from tonight, to vote for public housing, vote for affordable housing, and vote for the union. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Debbie. Mr. Tonight.
All right. This crowd is very amped today. Okay, now I want to introduce to you Reverend Mark Taylor from the Church of the Open Door, which is located in the middle of a public housing development called Farragut Houses in Fort Greene.
We need to stand here together today. Housing and just labor are not privileges, they are rights. Labor and public housing need to be defended. Defended from what? Defended from the interests of the rich landowners. Defended from what? Defended from corporations which care more about profit than about people. Defended from what? Defended from institutions that are racist, sexist, and exploitative. And if we do not fight now, we will never have a chance to fight. The truth about the annual housing plan proposed by New York City Housing Authority. Between this idea of deconcentration of poverty and between this hinting and this tendency towards flat rent, we are talking about the ejection of the current population of residents from public housing. How can you say that out of every 10 units that open up, you're only going to give preference to four of those units will be for poor people and six will be for wealthy people? How can you say that you intend to deconcentrate public housing when you want to bring rich people into the space where poor people live, but you don't want to move low-income people into the place where rich people live? And we who live and who work and who reside in public housing, who are the true experts, we know the truth. And the truth is, that you want, if you have this plan to move out the current residents, where is the plan that says we can go from ceiling rents to flat rents without displacing people and homelessness? These unions haven't seen the plan. The Legal Aid hasn't seen the plan. The NAACP Legal Defense Fund hasn't seen the plan. And most of all, I ain't seen the plan. So what should we do? NYCHA should impose Section 3. Section 3 not work for free. Section 3 not work for free. Section 3 not work for free. If you want to deconcentrate public housing, then do what the law says and give its residents the jobs that they are owed according to the law. Whatever else we should do, to all of my residents and friends, we should resist unjust changes and we should resist unjust laws. And if we do that, public housing will be what America should be, a place for everybody, no matter what color, no matter what class, no matter what creed. This is what God commands for the United States of America, and this is what we came to fight for today. NYCHA, do it right. NYCHA, do it now. NYCHA, justice for everyone.
Well, that's your job. Thank you, brother. Next up, we got our public advocate, Brother Mark Green.
Brothers and sisters, I'm not a preacher. I'm just a public advocate. And Scott Stringer was here earlier. And I agree with him, since he is running for the highest office in New York City, that of public advocate. You can count on me as your public advocate now, as your mayor later, to make sure that Washington and New York City train NYCHA residents, fix up NYCHA facilities, and don't victimize NYCHA residents because of an involuntary servitude rule. There's a 13th Amendment. You cannot impose involuntary servitude on people. How the hell does Washington say that people in NYCHA facilities getting a benefit have to work it off, but when I can deduct my mortgage payments from my taxes because of my co-op, I don't have to work it off? That's discriminatory, that's wrong, and that'll change. I promise 1 minute. This is a tale of two laws, a bad community requirement law and a terrific Section 3 law. If Washington says that people should be trained with apprenticeship programs, a percentage of all the construction jobs in NYCHA facilities, they should follow the law, not ignore the law, and I'm going to follow the rules of 1 minute. As your mayor, I'll be on your side marching with you to make sure Section 3 becomes a reality, not a piece of paper. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mark. Listen, we need to count on our new mayors that we elect. We have the power to elect the next mayor. And we need that mayor to get rid of the trash that's in NYCHA.
Who's got the power? What kind of power? What kind of power? Who's got the power? What kind of power?
This is Gilvin Bridges, your community and labor report in exile, reporting on a recent community and labor housing demonstration in Brooklyn, New York. Building Bridges is brought to you over internet radio by WBAI Radio in Exile, Wednesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. at www.wbix.org. You can also be placed on our email announcement list by writing to knash@igc.org. That's knash@igc.org.
We're here with Vic Bach, who is a member of the Community Service Society, a worker at the Community Service Society, who has been immersed in the issues of public housing. Why don't you lay out for us what the coalition that's operating here today is really about, i.e. the building trades, the issue of jobs, and the need to preserve public housing with some sense of dignity and egalitarianism.
Right. Well, you've got two things coming together. For one, you've got the 1998 law that mandates that every resident of public housing shall, quotation marks, volunteer 8 hours a month to community service, or within a year they face eviction. Now, there are exemptions, but there are a lot who are going to be subject to it. That has been outraging residents of public housing, particularly in New York City. That comes together with a long-felt need to open up training and jobs for public housing residents under Section 3, which has been in the federal law since 1968. And NYCHA has given only marginal attention. The unions are also converging because they want to see NYCHA open up more of their contracts to union labor at prevailing wages. And the unions are supporting wider enforcement of Section 3 and opposing the community service requirement.
Jesse Jackson Jr. actually was joking around that maybe they should add picking cotton to the mandatory work requirement. Clearly, there are those who are analogizing the 8 hours a month of forced work for people who live in public housing to slave labor. What is your sense about why this is happening? How does this relate to the issues of race and class and being a tenant in public housing, Vic?
Well, the community service requirement has ideological roots in Congress, particularly with the majority since 1994. And they're really saying, if you want to be a public housing resident, if you need affordable housing, you're going to be insulted, you're going to be attacked, you're going to be made to feel ashamed that you're living there as if you're an irresponsible citizen. So people are being forced to put in community service. The image is they're taking away from the rest of the taxpayers something they don't deserve.
Now, of course, we're unaware that there are national implications. Clearly, this is not New York City. But throughout the country, we haven't had the construction of any new public housing or any housing, really, with federal dollars, almost since the freeze of the Nixon years. How important is this issue to the preservation, and we hope at some point the extension of low-rent housing, and of course in some of the most expensive areas in the world, like New York City?
Right. Well, you know, the 1998 law, the federal law, prohibits any further construction of public housing. Now, community service is not the central issue of that law and of the issue you raised, but it's at the heart of the anti-tenant, anti-social policy ideology of the Congress that passed it.
You know, Vic, you're one of the people who's responsible for helping bring this coalition together. How important is it today, and how stimulated are you by the turnout here and what looks like it's rekindling a mass movement of public housing tenants to fight for decent, low-rent housing and not to become very literally second-class indentured citizens under the new federal policies?
Well, it's the New York voice. Residents of public housing here in New York are proud to live in public housing, and they're insulted by the law as it stands. And when they raise their voices, they make a dent with their delegation. Congressman Rangel, as you may know, has successfully gotten an amendment into the HUD budget bill that defunds community service for the next year. Basically, it'll put a halt to implementing community service. If New Yorkers raise their voices about the need for public housing, we'll also put a dent in the law in that way.
Well, I'd like to thank Vic Bach from the Community Service Society, most importantly, for doing the work that he does to make sure that public housing tenants have a national organizing beat these reactionary laws.
Thank you, and don't forget the Resident Alliance. Thanks, man.
Thank you. We're here with Judith Goldner, who is an attorney with the Legal Aid Society in New York City. Judith, you've worked on public housing issues for really decades almost now. What are some of the legal implications of what appears to be a real disparate treatment, i.e. treating tenants to a mandatory work requirement in order to sustain themselves in housing?
Obviously, we're very concerned that public housing tenants are being treated differently from tenants in other types of housing, like other types of, even other types of federally subsidized housing, and it seems grossly unfair. Unfortunately, as many things that Congress did to poor people, many of them are grossly unfair, and we have yet to see whether or not a challenge to that requirement can succeed.
When you say a challenge, what would that challenge actually be based on?
I think it depends. I mean, right now, we may not have to do a challenge because Charlie Rangel has proposed an amendment that has passed the House of Representatives that would defund this provision. What we're really hoping now is that the Senate will act on that provision and there won't be any money to enforce it. If there's no money to enforce it, the housing authorities aren't going to implement it, and that would be, of course, the best thing because then you don't have to do anything.
But Judith, one of the things that also concerns me, you and I know that there are many attacks on public housing. There are leases that are being changed that will mandate that people be evicted if a member of their household commits some sort of an alleged illegal act or antisocial act off project grounds. What do you think is the direction of public housing at this point?
Well, the direction of public housing here and across the country is incredibly punitive. It's to punish people for actions that they would never be punished for in private housing or if you owned your own home. And it's just one of the many ways that they want to punish poor people and penalize poor people for being poor.
Now, one of the new elements here, it's not exactly new, but it's come to fruition today, is the involvement of the building trades, involvement of a mass number of union activists who are standing, I might add, under a 30-foot inflatable rat, which has now become the symbol, certainly in New York, of abuses to working people from management. How significant is it, the coming together of this community labor coalition, which is building bridges?
Incredibly significant. I mean, it makes such a difference when you have labor coming together, and you know, both sides have something to gain from it. Labor really wants to get a piece of the contracts that the housing authority is letting, and they're not getting, and they're not being allowed to participate in, and they want those contracts, and they know that if they partner with residents and give residents job training and apprenticeship training and allow them jobs, it's a way to make labor much more sympathetic and to bring in a whole host of people to support that they wouldn't necessarily have before. So you now have all the politicians and other public officials that supported the residents together with all of them that used to support labor, and it's an incredibly powerful coalition. And I think the housing authority is very scared.
Now you're about to go in and testify. Tell us a little bit about what the hearing is about today and what your testimony is going to be.
Well, the hearing today is about the Housing Authority's annual plan, which is their plan for how they're going to run their program over the next year. And we're here to talk about mainly all the things that aren't in their plan. You know, why their community service requirement is not in part of this plan. We don't have an opportunity to comment on it. Why there's nothing about Section 3, which is the requirement that residents get jobs, and why they aren't talking about ways they're going to implement that. Why they aren't talking about safety and security, and why they can't make public housing safer. There are all these huge gaps in this plan, and that's what we're mainly going to talk about. And I think most of the people here are going to talk about it.
I know that Legal Aid has had discussion with some of these issues with the New York City Housing Authority. Is there any sense that they will respond to the mandate of, certainly on one level, the pressures of Charles Rangel and Harlem, or the pressures of this coalition of labor and community residents?
I have not heard from them that they are responding, but my sense is that they are very concerned about this coalition and what it's going to mean for them. And given the current political situation, they're all worried about their jobs. So it's going to be interesting to see how it plays out.
Judith Goldner, attorney with the Legal Aid Society of New York City, thank you. Well, I'm here with somebody who perhaps typifies the issues of today. This is Adrian Holder. Adrian Holder is the vice president of the Association of Legal Aid Attorneys. When I say she typifies many of the issues, this is someone who has worked on behalf of public housing tenants and somebody who, of course, is a representative of labor here today. Adrian, what is your testimony or what are your feelings for these testimonies that we're preparing about the demonstration that's being held today, which is really a building bridges, a synthesis of tenants and members of the working class labor?
What I think is really key to all of this is the fact that we're talking about laborers, we're talking about low-income folks, we're talking about New Yorkers coming together and understanding that before you can implement any of these policies, we have to first talk about what's real. And what's real is jobs, what's real is job training, education, and opportunities for folks. Section 3 actually is the integrating thread that actually weaves together all the issues that are concerning public housing residents right now. NYCHA talks about deconcentration of poverty. How better to do that than to properly implement Section 3, which is going to provide training and opportunity and jobs for residents in public housing. NYCHA talks about admissions and that they want to have a more diverse tenant body. How better, by income, how better to do that than through the proper and, you know, legal implementation of Section 3. Once again, we're talking about opportunities and training for folks to be able to have real opportunities and jobs. NYCHA likes to talk about the rents and what it is that they need to do about maintaining their rents at a particular level to make sure that they can operate these developments. And how better to once again talk about any kind of generation of revenue with rents, which all should only always cover just NYCHA's operating costs, than through the proper implementation of Section 3. It is proper, it is right, it is just that the unions are here today with all New Yorkers who are concerned about issues of low-income housing and opportunities for people to live and be in safe housing in New York City.
Adrian, what do you think is the politic that is represented by these policies, which we should say, of course, were implemented under the Clinton administration and are now being carried forward by the Housing and Urban Development Administration under the Bush administration? What does this actually represent and say about poor people housing and also poor people struggling for work in this society?
We know this is all just a way in which the government is just sloughing off their real responsibilities to making sure that everybody in decent conditions in which to live. The government is trying to get out of the business of public housing. They're trying to get out of their responsibility to make sure that people are safe and that they have safety nets and that they have housing that's available to them. This is all a movement towards being able to shuck off that responsibility. And how better way to do that than to try to prove that the folks in which you are trying to serve in this country actually have some kind of moral defect or have some kind of character impediment, which would then allow you to justify not serving them. And that's all it is. It's punitive. It's meant to drive good folks away from these type of services, and it's meant for the rest of us to feel justified that for the government in doing that so that they can vilify this population of folks. But these are our neighbors. These are our brothers and sisters. They're folks who are every day walking through our city. They are us. And so for them to do this, this is a real attack on who we are. And I'm so glad to see right now that here in New York City, we're not going to stand for it. And so we're coming together to do something about it. And I'd also like to just say, whatever starts out here at the largest housing authority, supposedly the best run housing authority in the country, we remind people all the time, watch out, because whatever starts here, that's what's going to be going on. And it's a movement, and it's real. And I really appreciate that we're all coming together on this today. We're happy to report that because of a lot of the efforts of the Resident Alliance, having gone and taken busloads of residents down to Washington, D.C., that Charlie Rangel has introduced two things. First, he has successfully passed appropriations language that strips the budget of a way in which for HUD to have monies to implement the community service requirement. It has already passed. And we are hopeful that the Senate will pass similar language. But that only takes care of the problem for this year. What he's done as a second part, which is more lasting, is he's introduced a bill in the House, and we're looking for that companion legislation in the Senate, that is the wholesale repeal of the community service requirement for all of the reasons that we hear folks here talking about it today, that is disrespectful to tenants and that it does not really address the real issues. And so we're extremely hopeful that something like this is going to pass in both houses. But Charlie Rangel, he's really doing some of the heavy lifting here along with Congresswoman Velasquez, and we've gotten the appropriations language passed. And in the House, as we know, where the Democrats don't have a majority, that was a huge lift. And we're hoping the same thing can happen in the Senate.
Adrian Holder, thank you for speaking with WBIX Radio in Exile.
Ladies and gentlemen, would you kindly take your seats? My name is Joyce Harrison, and I will serve as the moderator for this evening's public hearing on the Housing Authority's FY 2002 agency plan. Tonight, we are here to hear your comments regarding NYCHA's FY 2002 draft agency plan. Tonight's hearing is about the draft plan. Now we will officially start the hearing. The first speaker, Council Member Christine Quinn.
My name is Christine Quinn, and I'm a city council member from the west side of Manhattan. I have a couple of different matters I'd like to comment on. First, the community service requirement. I want to state for the record that I unequivocally oppose to the community service requirement for public housing residents. Simply put, safe, stable housing is a human right, and no work condition should be imposed on it. A tenant's obligation is to pay their rent. I fail to understand what gives anyone the right to impose more obligations on one specific type of tenants and not on any others. That's why I join with the Resident Advisory Board and the New York City Resident Alliance in condemning these requirements as forced labor. I support the work of Congressmember Charles Rangel on this issue and urge the Housing Authority to take an aggressive position as it relates to the federal government and stand with Congressmember Rangel as he attempts to get his amendments passed by the United States Senate. Job training and employment opportunities. The fact that NYCHA has repeatedly refused to address Section 3 implementation is quite simply an outrage. NYCHA has a legal obligation to utilize their funding to increase opportunities for job training and placement. NYCHA's refusal regarding Section 3 is particularly egregious based on NYCHA's zeal to implement the community service requirement. This makes it clear that NYCHA picks and chooses which federal laws and requirements to follow and which to ignore. NYCHA must insist on investing their funds in legitimate labor and must make Section 3 a reality in New York City. Unions would be the obvious source of contracted labor, and many residents would benefit from the long-term apprenticeship plans that are offered by unions. This approach would certainly contribute to the employment and stability of public housing residents and would also assure a reasonable quality of workmanship. I urge NYCHA to include a Section 3 implementation strategy in your 2002 plan. Rents. It is my understanding that NYCHA is carrying out a rent subsidy to determine the flat rent option for each development and whether ceiling rent should be changed. I want to state clearly that I oppose the flat rent option. I represent three NYCHA developments. I represent a district which now has some of the highest rents in the city. A flat rent option would mean that none of the people who are the present incomes of those who live in these projects would ever be able to move in, and I believe it would put pressure and potential harassment on the existing tenants to force them out to bring higher income tenants in. I also want to state clearly that I'm calling for zero changes to ceiling rents. The deconcentration plan, I believe, is grossly one-sided. I fail to understand how, in any good faith or in any sense of fairness, NYCHA could call for a plan that's going to move people of higher incomes into some developments, but not offer people of lower incomes the opportunity to move into developments which have concentrations of higher income people. It seems incredibly one-sided.
Thank you for your comments. The next speaker is Congresswoman Nydia Velasquez.
Thank you. I have one of the highest concentration of public housing residents in New York City. And that is why I serve on the House Subcommittee of Housing. I wasn't named to that subcommittee. I asked to serve in the Housing Subcommittee in the House of Representatives. So I just want to tell you, sir, that when you talk about the public law that we passed, I passed the law. I know what we passed. I know what it means. I voted against it. There are three major topics I want to address regarding NYCHA's fiscal year 2002 plan. My first concern is admission of quotas and deconcentration of poverty. NYCHA continues to hold only 4 out of 10 newly available apartments for the lowest income families. This is the bare minimum the law allows. You know you can do better, and in the past, you used to do better. You must return to the policy of holding at least 50% of the apartment for the poor families in New York City. The federal government doesn't impose that you must hold only 40%. You can do better, and we request that you do 50%. That is what is morally right. After all, we represent a compassionate, conservative administration in Washington and in New York City. Public housing in New York City should be about what is needed, not what is required. And you are dead wrong when it comes to deconcentration of poverty. If you say that you want mixed income, then it should apply to all developments, not only the lowest income developments. Our most at-risk families should be prioritized for the higher income developments. My second concern is about economic opportunities for residents. NYCHA must work with residents to improve the economic situation of those who live in public housing by enforcing Section 3 instead of promoting higher income residents. I demand, as a member of the Subcommittee of Housing, that you share with me the two studies regarding ceiling and flat rents within the next 6 months. For 3 years, you have been conducting this study, and you haven't shared it with the residents of New York public housing residents.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, the next speaker is Bronx Borough President Fernando Ferreira.
Thank you. I appreciate this opportunity to comment on the Housing Authority's draft fiscal year 2002 agency plan. My plan would address the housing crisis by building 150,000 units of low and moderate income housing over the next 10 years and investing in a multi-billion dollar plan to achieve those housing production goals. It also anticipates that NYCHA follows its mandate and works simultaneously to maintain and expand its public housing and subsidized housing portfolio. I'll focus on 4 specific issues regarding the proposed plan for NYCHA as it pertains to the community service requirement, the safety and security of NYCHA residents, job training and employment opportunities for community residents, and the expiration of federal welfare benefits. To comply with the 1998 Housing Act, NYCHA plans to implement by the end of 2001, this year, a community service requirement for adult residents of public housing to provide 8 hours of monthly community service or risk being evicted. As many as 70,000 residents of public housing could be affected by this requirement. Let me tell you now, I unequivocally oppose this federal requirement that unfairly singles out residents of public housing, who by and large are poor and come from communities of color and forces them to engage in activities that others who receive considerable housing subsidies are not required to participate in. The largest housing subsidy program in the country is the tax deduction for mortgages. But the federal government correctly imposes no community service requirement on them, nor should we on the recipients of that subsidy. So how fair is it to impose it on up to 70,000 NYCHA residents?
Thank you.
Excuse me. I'm an officer of this city, and an officer of this city for nearly 20 years. Do not grab this microphone, sir. I will continue, thank you. I support Congressman Rangel's legislation which amends the House HUD appropriation to prohibit local housing authorities from using federal funds to implement or enforce this requirement. The Senate must act to pass a similar amendment. The government must provide job training and employment opportunities to help lift tenants of public housing into jobs that provide decent wages and benefits. NYCHA has an integral role to play in this effort. Yet the draft plan for fiscal year 2002 neglects to include any effort to implement Section 3 of the 1968 Housing Act. I strongly urge you to address this omission and to present the public with NYCHA's plans on making these opportunities available to residents as the law clearly intended. And finally, the expiration of federal welfare benefits for many housing residents requires NYCHA to have a plan in place to address this critical issue. The draft 2002 plan contains no language that acknowledges the fact that many NYCHA residents will lose federal public assistance. Further, it includes no proposal to provide assistance to ensure that residents in need can transition smoothly into the state safety net program. As a result, more public housing residents on public assistance risk falling through the cracks and may be unable to pay their own rent. NYCHA should indicate its plans for assisting public housing residents faced with the expiration of federal welfare benefits. I think the many challenges facing NYCHA in the years ahead reflect the many difficulties in the current housing market. We must work together to expand our housing stock, to preserve existing resources and public housing in the public domain, to protect all New York City residents and build more affordable housing, thereby improving the quality of life for all New Yorkers. Thank you, now I'm done.
Thank you.
Well, we're here with Fernando Farrar, who is gracing Brooklyn today from the Bronx. Of course, Fernando Farrar is running for the mayor of New York City. Now, why are you here today? What's so critical about the issue that brings you here of the New York City Housing Authority?
The Housing Authority, in all of its nearly 350 developments, housed 500,000 New Yorkers, among the poorest residents of this city, and someone must speak for them on issues of participation in the workforce and job training. These onerous work requirements that were enacted in the Congress by Rick Lazio, who received a just retirement last year in the Senate race. And so many other issues of renewal and maintenance and public safety that the Housing Authority failed to neglect in its draft fiscal year 2002 plan. That's why I came here to address them, reminding them of their obligation as a public housing authority to do right by their 500,000 residents.
Quite frankly, the issue of housing has not particularly been on the agenda as it should for any of the mayoral candidates. As a matter of fact, I don't remember in New York the issue of housing being on the agenda since Jimmy Carter visited the South Bronx during its days of fires and rage.
What do you think needs to be done in terms of preserving and extending from the federal government the financing of public housing, particularly, obviously, for low and moderate income people in this country as a whole?
Well, with all due respect, I beg to differ. Housing has been at the top of my governmental agenda. President of the Bronx for over 14 years, having presided over the construction of nearly 67,000 homes and apartments for low and moderate income people. That's why I'm here today, and that's why housing is among the four top priorities of my campaign, the thing I talk about most, offering the boldest, I think, and most creative plan to produce in the next 10 years over 150,000 units of affordable housing.
You mentioned, and you were the only one to mention it so far at this hearing, and that is the sunsetting of people who will be facing their limits under public assistance. What do you think the relationship, the correlation of these hearings and the cutoff of welfare benefits are for people who are obviously poor and in desperate need of housing?
Well, it was an attempt by the Gingrich-era Congress to penalize the poorest of the poor. It is simple, and that is a fact. We must now undo that sad legacy, lest it create more homelessness in the city, more homelessness in America. Well, I've objected to it, not because it's the law of the land, but because it fails to provide for two important components for moving people from welfare to work: child care and real job training. This city has dropped the ball on those two critically important issues. And how do you move a woman with dependent children from the world of welfare to the world of training and education and work without adequate child care, without adequate job training? Thank you.
Borough President, one more question.
This has been Building Bridges, your Community and Labor Report in Exile on the Community and Labor-led demonstration for fairness in public housing. Building Bridges is brought to you over Internet Radio by WBAI Radio in Exile, Wednesdays from 8 to 9 p.m. at www.wbix.org. You can also be placed on our email announcement list by writing to knash@igc.org. That's knash@igc.org. Archived copies of selected Building Bridges programs are posted on our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org. For Building Bridges, this is Ken Nash with Mimi Rosenberg in solidarity.